Well, good evening, everybody. Glad to see you here. I got it. Mic runner, we got one. Right yonder. He's got a mic. She's got a mic. We're just making sure you're going to run for us. He's the best runner by far. She's a lot faster than Rendell. Yeah.
Just because I've got older.
Is that why?
Sure.
She's better, yeah. She's better looking, too, I tell you that. Well, today we are getting into the Bible verses dealing with the book of Daniel. And so that's where we will be. We've spent the last three times that we've come together to talk about the history of the book of Daniel and lead us up to where we are now. And so we'll take it from right here with Daniel 1:1. And we will start covering this today. This is our first lesson where we will actually be pulling the verses out of Daniel, and we'll be looking at those verses specifically. There's a lot of history in Daniel. A lot of history and a lot of things going on in Daniel, and I'll try to answer as many questions as I possibly can, and if you have a question that I cannot answer, I'll find somebody that can, or I'll look it up. So we'll get there, and so we'll make sure that we know everything. So today we want to start with chapter 1. So the first chapter of Daniel explains how Daniel and his three friends, who were his three friends, y'all remember? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and we'll talk a little bit about that here in just a few minutes. Joni brought that up a few weeks ago. And we'll talk about that in just a few minutes. But here we're going to be talking about in chapter 1 about how Daniel and his three friends were taken away from Jerusalem and were taken to Babylon, and they were trained for service in the king's court. So Nebuchadnezzar wanted them in the king's court. Now, I think I've told you all this before. Nebuchadnezzar was not dumb by any stretch of the imagination. So what does he do? He surrounds himself with the brightest and best. That's what he does. And if they came out of Jerusalem, that's fine with him. He didn't mind that. He brought them in because by having the brightest and best around him, that would help him in his ability to be king. That's a smart person. Some of the smartest people I've ever known, I've told y'all that before, were people who realized that if they surround themselves with very intelligent people, very sharp people, that that makes them look better too. Because they make fewer mistakes that way, they do smarter things that way, all these things fall into place. Well, Nebuchadnezzar was not dumb. Nebuchadnezzar reigned for 41 years as king. And so to reign that long as king, excuse me, is a very important thing in and among itself, that he was able to do that, because kings didn't typically last very long at that time frame, especially when the way to be promoted was to kill the one that was over you. So if the one that's over you is the king, you wipe out the king, and then you become king. And then, of course, then the ones under you come after you. So I'm not sure how smart that was, you know. Sometimes it's a better idea not to be king, because that way they won't shoot at you, you know, type thing. But anyway, chapter 1 is about Daniel and his three friends who were taken from Jerusalem when Jerusalem was conquered. Their determination to follow God's law. I'm talking about the four. Even in foreign lands is emphasized in this chapter. That's the major emphasis of this chapter. That they will follow God's laws regardless of what the laws of man are. Now, realize this, and I've mentioned this before, but it's something to hold fast to. You know, and I've heard this multiple times about how we're supposed to obey the laws of the land. Well, I'll agree with that up to a point. Up to a point. As long as the laws of the land don't go against God's law. You understand that? And that's exactly what these four young men did. They obeyed the laws of the land until those laws went against God's law. And then they were not under such bondage. We today are the same way. We are not under bondage if it goes against God's law. For example, and I'll give you this example. If somebody came in here today and said we could no longer meet together as Christians in this building, that we could no longer come and worship together. You know what? We don't have to obey that. We can go somewhere else. We can meet in the catacombs as they did in Rome. It doesn't matter. We can still come together and we will still come together. They're not going to stop us. They're not going to stop us from that. But on the same regard, if you drive 70 miles an hour around this bypass right there, and the speed limit's 55, be very careful. You're probably going to get pulled over. Now, that is a law of man that you should obey. That is man's law, and you should obey that law. It's a smart law to obey. Because there's been a lot of accidents right there at Pleasant Valley Road, haven't there? Yeah, and right there where we are. And so, you know, those are laws that we are to obey. But if they go against God's law, that's where you draw the line. That's where you draw the line. And in the book of Daniel, you're going to see that. You're going to see these men go against man's law in order to make sure that they follow God's law. Okay? Does that make sense to everybody? All right. God rewarded their faithfulness with health, knowledge, and wisdom. Health, knowledge, and wisdom. I could use that right now. Yeah, go ahead.
And protection.
And protection. And that's exactly correct. Now, notice knowledge and wisdom are two different things. You can have knowledge without any wisdom at all. Okay? But I don't think you can have wisdom without knowledge. Because you have to have both. All right? But you can have knowledge and not have any wisdom. You ever heard about somebody who's book smart? Okay? They know a lot of that book, but they don't know how to, they don't have any horse sense, yeah. But they can't apply that book to what's going on or their life or anything else. Well, that's wisdom. Wisdom is to apply it. Apply the knowledge that you have. That's the difference. Well, here, they received all those things. They received knowledge. They received wisdom. They received health and protection, as Rendell brought out. Because that's exactly what they received. Daniel was given the ability to interpret dreams and make a favorable impression on Nebuchadnezzar. Now, we will see this in the first act that gets Nebuchadnezzar's attention. And that's when Daniel interprets his dreams. So that will be the first thing that we see where it really gets Nebuchadnezzar's attention. Okay? To the point that he considers Daniel one of his favorites. If not his favorite. Okay? So, as we look at this, even though symbols and unusual language are used in this book, the historical narrative of chapter 1 is very clear. King Nebuchadnezzar had taken the best of the vessels from the temple in Jerusalem back to Babylon, leaving the rest for the Jews to conduct their temple worship. Now, I mentioned this before, but I'm going to mention it again right here. We do not read about or hear about any more about the Ark of the Covenant after this happens. The Ark is gone, the Ark is taken, and as I told you before, they probably melted it down and took the gold, or Nebuchadnezzar took it and put it in his temple. But either way, it was taken. And we don't read about it anymore in any scripture, anywhere, talking about the Ark of the Covenant. And I've told you before that I do not believe that it exists anymore. I think it was, like I said, I think it was probably melted down. The gold was taken. It was used. I don't think it exists anymore, primarily because I believe, now this is my belief, and so take it or leave it, but I believe very strongly that God doesn't want us worshiping things. And if we had the ark sitting right here, everybody would be worshiping the ark. God doesn't want that. God wants us worshiping Him, the Creator, not the created. Does that make sense? So we don't want any part of that. We don't want any part of that. Plus, you know, if you go over to, and I look at Joe, because Joe's well aware of all this, even though Joe shaved and everything. I wanted to mention that this morning, but I didn't do it. I almost didn't recognize him. Didn't even know who he was. Yeah. But, you know, you go over to Jerusalem, or you go over to all these quote-unquote holy places and all this stuff, and they have all these special places and whatnot, and they have a concrete, actually it's just a stone slab, where they say that Jesus' body was laid. And you can go up and see it, and people will go up and see that, and they'll kiss it, and they'll put their hands on it, and they, you know. And I'm just going, okay. Number one, I don't believe that that's true. I don't believe it is where Jesus was laid, number one. But number two, God wouldn't want us to be doing that anyway. God doesn't want us to worship a place or a item. God wants us to worship Him. So that would not be part of that. So, my belief is the Ark of the Covenant doesn't exist any longer. And all those items that they had in the temple don't exist anymore. They're gone. And the reason why they're gone is because God doesn't want that for us anyway. Okay? All right. This event in chapter 1 shows the justice of God. Okay? The fact that all these things were taken away shows the justice of the God. And I'll get into that here in just a minute. Beginning with Solomon. Beginning with King Solomon. The people of Israel, notice this, had polluted God's temple. What had they done? Everywhere that they had gone and conquered, they had brought back things that they had conquered from idols and different things like that and put them in the temple. That's what they did. And by doing that, they had diminished what the temple was for, what it was all about, the presence of God. So they had done that. So beginning with Solomon, they had polluted everything that was in God's temple. And various idolatrous nations whom they had conquered, they had taken their idols and put it in God's temple. Now in doing that, the people still trusted in the presence of God. They still considered Him to be on their side. They still considered Him to be the one that would deliver them from all of their problems. And we've been studying that on our Tuesday night studies. If you ever come to one of those of you who have been coming to those, you realize real quickly, that's exactly what Saul did. Even though he desecrated what God had told him to do and God told him to do certain things and he wouldn't do them, or he didn't do them the right way, and so what happens? He still counts on God to get him out of his problem. And so that's what happens with Saul. Well, this is no different here. Because from that point with Solomon, when they started bringing in all those items, they still counted on God to take them and protect them from their enemies, but they had desecrated what God had done. God warned them 2 centuries earlier in Isaiah 39, 6 and 7 that their treasures would be taken. So 200 years before this event, God had already told them that these things were going to be taken. And the reason why is because they had desecrated the temple. Since they did not listen to God and trusted what was inferior, those idols, those different things, they lost both their service to God and their possessions that they trusted. Okay? Comments, questions? Along with the vessels of the temple, the king of Babylon also took the best young people he could find out of Jerusalem. Like I said, he's not dumb. So he goes and he gets the best, the brightest individuals that he could find and takes them back with him to Babylon. He was intent on incorporating, now this is interesting, all of those captive people into Babylonian society. He was going to indoctrinate them into his society, into Babylon, the Babylonian society. Now Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego wouldn't go that way. But that's what he was intent on doing. These young people were to be educated in the government, laws, customs, languages, and sciences of the Chaldeans for 3 years. So they were to be trained and taught for 3 years all of the aspects of the Chaldean people. The young men were chosen from some of the royal family and nobles. That's one of the reasons why it's thought that Daniel may have come from some of these royal family members who were described as youths in whom no defect, who were good looking, showing intelligence in every branch of wisdom, endowed with understanding and discerning knowledge. Sounds like me. They'd have probably grabbed me up there.
They'd have had to took you, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they'd have had to took me. They'd have had to take it. Yeah, yeah. I only wish I had all that. But those, they chose the best they could find to head up the king's court. They chose the best they could find. Go ahead.
You know, this gets back to when we were talking about the difference between wisdom and knowledge.
Right.
Is that they had the smarts. They were taught all these Babylonian black arts and all this here, but they knew, they kept knowing the difference between their God and the false gods.
Very good.
Kind of like when I was growing up here, I was fascinated by Greek mythology.
Uh-huh.
And I enjoyed studying. It was some really interesting stories.
Uh-huh.
But I never did. That was always mythology.
Right.
And yeah. I never did consider that it real stuff.
Right.
So it's yeah. Kind of like what they had to do.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And they were trained. They had the best teachers that they could get. And so they were trained in every way so that they would know the customs of the Chaldean people. Yes, ma'am.
Was Nebuchadnezzar an older man for him to be picking the younger ones to
train
up?
That's a good question. He was a king for 41 years. So I don't think he was that much older. Daniel was 15 when he was taken. But I don't think he was probably more than about 25 to maybe pushing 30. Because 41 years he had to live to been 71 years old. And so if you look at it from that standpoint, people of that time frame didn't live that long typically. So I'm thinking, and this is just me thinking this way, but I would think that he would probably be in his probably mid-20s when he became king. He was smart. He was smart. And I'm not going to denounce his intelligence at all. Now, where I denounce him and where I question him is on his wisdom, like what we were talking about. Because he loses his mind every once in a while and doesn't follow his wisdom. But that's where I would denounce him as far as his wisdom is concerned. But as far as his knowledge, he's right up there. He knows what he's doing. Or he wouldn't have been king for 41 years. Okay? Got one over here.
I know it says they were young, but how do we know he was 15?
That was one of the things that we had talked about earlier. Daniel was taken when he was right at 15 years old based upon what history teaches us. Not as far as the Bible itself. But they say young men, and these were teenagers. Go ahead.
According to Google, he's right at 30 years old he was born in 630 B.C. and became king around 600 B.C.
Yeah. He conquered Jerusalem at 605 B.C. That's when he conquers Jerusalem. And that was during his third year as king. Third year. So you're saying he was right around 30 years old when he became king? Okay. That would fit in what I was talking about. That would fit exactly. So somewhere in that range is what I would think. Somewhere in that range. According to Google. If you Google it, it's got to be, right? Yeah.
It has some historical stuff there to support it. I just give you the quick version.
Yeah. Well, that wouldn't surprise me at all. Matter of fact, like I said, 25, somewhere in that range. So he would have been right around 30 years old for sure. Okay. Now notice this. The first criteria is physical. These young men that he chose could not have any blemish, no physical malnormity. Everything had to be perfect in all regards. Because people who had that physical attractiveness were typically considered to be people who were blessed by God. And so that would fit into Nebuchadnezzar's thoughts and ideas that the people who were the most attractive would have been the ones that were being blessed by their God, and therefore you want that type of person around the king. I love her running over there. Go ahead.
I was trying to see where it was mentioned in the Bible, the criteria for the priests to serve. They had to be pure. And,
yeah, that's right.
And so that was God's criteria, similar to this.
That was. And that was, and like I said, that would have been Nebuchadnezzar's thoughts too. God's criteria was for the priests that they had to be, they couldn't have any physical defects. They had to be perfect physically without blemish. Yep. Okay. As part of their assimilation into Babylonian society, the Jewish captives were given new names. Now, this is kind of interesting because all four of these men were given new names. And that incorporated the names of the Babylonian gods. So all four of them received new names. Go ahead.
Back to the physical appearance.
Yes.
Daniel and his three buddies would have been circumcised, should have been circumcised.
Yes, they would have.
Okay, the Babylonians would not have been.
No.
So they didn't take that as a deformality, you know, that they right. that they were different.
Right. They would
just
not.
Something to think on. You know, Nebuchadnezzar was smart enough to understand what that meant.
Yes. Then. Yes. That's correct. All right. The changing of their names was at least in part an attempt to erase their religious stature with the Jews and influence them to become more assimilated in the Babylonian society. That was why they changed their names. Okay? All right. Let's look at verse 1. Verse 1, chapter 1. Got a few things to look at. In the third year of the reign of Jeroboam, king of Judea, that was in 605 B.C. Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. Now remember, King Nebuchadnezzar starts the siege before he becomes king. He becomes king after the siege begins. But the siege is completed when he is king. So in 605 B.C., Nebuchadnezzar is king at that point. Okay? Remember, this is what I've got up there. For the king of Judah. And if you go all the way down to number 18, down there at the bottom, you'll see that that's the king of Judah at the time when Nebuchadnezzar takes Jerusalem. Number 18 down at the bottom. And it shows that he was king from 608 to 597 B.C. And remember, it says that in verse 1, it was during the third year of the reign. So during his third year, which makes it 605 B.C. Notice also, if you can see it up there on the board, notice also this. What kind of character did he have? He was wicked. Wicked. That's usually not a good sign. This was an evil person. Over here.
So, even though they were in captivity in Babylon, they still have a king of their
Yes,
own?
They did. That's a good question. That's a great question. Because that's exactly correct. They still had a king. And Nebuchadnezzar still allowed them to do certain things. Nebuchadnezzar took the best that they had. He took the best people that they had. He took the best gold that they had. He left certain things in the temple in order so that they could continue to have their worship. But Nebuchadnezzar does not dethrone him. He allows him to stay. But now, he wasn't there very long, but he still allows him to stay. Okay? And also, if you see those next two underneath, they were there too during that time frame. So, yes. Nebuchadnezzar still allowed them to have their king. But Nebuchadnezzar was over them. Yeah, that's exactly correct. And that's a great question. Sir?
Well, if I'm reading this right, 17 and 18, was there just 3 months? And
number 18 was there 11 years.
Yeah.
19 was there 3 months. 17 was there 3 months. Yep.
Okay, that's what I was thinking.
And that's one of the reasons why I tell y'all that Nebuchadnezzar is actually pretty sharp, or he wouldn't have been able to stay there 41 years. Because look how long they're staying, 3 months. You know, it's got to be pretty bad if they're only there 3 months and they get kicked out. He was there a long time, wasn't he? Yeah. 52 years, Uzzah.
Steve, I'm not sure on which of these. It may have been Jehoiakim. But, you know, he came before Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar killed all his sons in front of him.
Yes.
And then poked out his eyes.
That's right.
But he didn't kill him.
No. So he wouldn't be able to see. And that was one of the things that they said, that he was going to be taken to Babylon. But he would never see Babylon. And so he says, how could that happen? Now he's told that. He said, how could that happen? Well, the way that it happens is he poked out his eyes. Yeah, we'll get to that. We're not there yet. We got a ways to go to get to that point. But yeah, that's exactly what happened. Okay. Verse 2. And the Lord handed Jehoiakim, king of Judea, over to him, along with some of the vessels of the house of God. Understand that they ransacked everything. They took what was they thought was the best. They took the nicest stuff. They took it out. But they left the other stuff there so that they could continue to worship their God. Okay? They took the vessels of the house of God and brought them to the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, and he brought the vessels into the treasury of his God. So again, they were brought into their temple, their treasury. And here's the area that we're talking about there. If y'all can see that, that is right there on the Euphrates River. That's where Babylon is. And that shows you, it points right to it, to where all these vessels were taken. All these things were taken out of the temple. Jerusalem is way down here. See where it says Canaan, Lebanon? On that side. That's where it is. The little light that I have, the little laser pointer, doesn't work on the TV. I can't tell you. It's right over yonder. Jake's got a little laser pointer. Yeah, there's a red dot. Okay. All right. The king told Asphanez. I'm not going to get that right. What did you call it? Ashpenaz? The chief of his officials, to bring some of the sons of Israel, including some of the royal family and of the nobles. That's why I tell you that most scholars believe that Daniel came from the royal family. We don't know that to be exact. We don't know that to be true. But this verse here in verse 3 says that he brought some of the royal family with him. So these are the nobles. These are the royal family. These are the top people of Israel. Go ahead.
They would have been the ones that were the highest educated.
They would have been the highest educated.
Of all of the Israelites.
And like I told you, Daniel was very educated, because he writes the book of Daniel in two different languages. He's very educated. He knows. Very well educated. Youths in whom there was no impairment, who were good looking, suitable for instruction in every kind of expertise. So these would have had to have been very intelligent young people. endowed with understanding and discerning knowledge, and who had ability to serve in the king's court. And he ordered Ashpenaz, I guess I say it, to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans. So they got the best education possible. Verse 5. The king also allotted for them a daily ration of the king's choice food. Now this is important, because they did not give slaves good food to eat. But they definitely give these young men the best foods that are available. And the reason they do that is because, again, they want them to be leaders among their community. And so they're giving them everything that they can get. They give them the best education. They give them the best food. They take care of them every way they can take care of them so that they could be that type of individual that would help King Nebuchadnezzar. That's a good point. Now, here's the deal with that. As far as King Nebuchadnezzar is concerned, yes, that would have been unclean animals. But as far as Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they did not eat anything that was unclean. They did not. So there's a big difference there. So yes, that would have included hogs and ham and bacon and good stuff. Good stuff. Yeah. Catfish. That would include catfish. Yeah. Yeah. Do what? They would eat vegetables and water when they did not receive anything that was clean to eat. Now, if it was clean to eat, they would eat it. But they would not go against God's law. And see, that's the whole ball of wax there that you're looking at. You're not going against God's law. God says, don't eat that. I'm not going to eat that. Like I said, I wished that I could be like Daniel, because I know that I'm not of that level. Because if the king would have put ham in front of me, I'd have probably ate it. Bone and all. I'd say, gnawed on it for a while anyway. Okay, and notice that he ordered that they be educated for 3 years, and at the end of which they were to enter the king's personal service. So they're going to receive the best education possible, and then they're going to serve the king. Right up here. It's Miss Sue.
I was just thinking that, you know, he's bringing these foreigners into his kingdom and going to make them his personal service, his cabinet, so to speak,
right,
or whatever.
Right.
Could it be because he didn't trust the people that were there because they'd been killing off the kings, and he figured, if I get my own personal people in here?
Well, that's a possibility, yeah. That's always a possibility, because that was always something that stood over the king's head. About them wiping the king out so that they could move up in status. So that was always something that they feared. But really what I see here mostly is the fact that he wanted the best of the best. And that doesn't matter. And he considered them probably better than what he had. Or he wouldn't have chosen them.
And it would have been easier for him, having Jewish people following his laws, they would have been accepted easier with some of the Jewish people.
Oh, yes, most definitely. Most definitely.
That's part of it, because he had quite a wide variety of officials and royals from different places.
That would have been much easier for the Jewish people to assimilate into his society if he's got Jewish people that are in leadership positions. Yes, most definitely. Yes, sir, Mr. Randy.
That's kind of like a genetically modifying they do nowadays.
Genetic modify? Yeah. Because they're really pulling those people in so that they would assimilate into their society. Yes, ma'am.
Sometimes with assimilation comes desensitization to, like, their Daniel and his friends and, like, us. The way society's changing, they keep changing the rules because they accept people. They're slowly getting us to accept different things that the Bible speaks against. Mm-hmm. But we refuse to become, you know, ignorant of, or, you know, oh, okay, I guess that's all right, you know.
Yeah. It's kind of what I talked about this morning, wasn't it? At least partly. Okay? All right, verse 6. Now, among them from the sons of Judah were Daniel. Now, I'm going to get these names wrong, so please excuse me. Hananiah. Say it one more time. Mishael and Azariah. Azariah. I'm glad they changed their names too. Yeah, okay. Now, those are the ones, and those are listed in verse 6. Those are special listed in verse 6. Now, in verse 7, it tells you what their names were changed to. Okay? Daniel's name was changed. Notice also, you got Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Those names are changed. But it's always interesting to see this in verse 7, because when we talk about Daniel, we talk about Daniel using his Hebrew name. And when we talk about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, we talk about them using their Chaldean name or Babylonian name that's given to them. Why that is, I do not know. I do not know. But it is definitely one that we take notice of, because when we go through these stories and we take a look at them, the names that they use, we need to be aware of those names. Go ahead.
Those weren't the only four that was taken. Those are just the only four that are concentrated on in Daniel's book.
Correct.
And we don't know how many was taken up, you know, but there were several, I think.
But notice, too, the reason why their names are changed from their Hebrew name into a Chaldean name or Babylonian name is to further assimilate them into the Babylonian society. Come up here, Jules. Miss Kathy.
I was just thinking it's possible, since Daniel wrote at least the first part of Daniel, that's why it continued as Daniel, because he considered himself Daniel.
Yeah. It's also interesting to me to see Jesus himself. When Jesus mentions Daniel, he talks about Daniel. He doesn't talk about, you know, their other names. He talks about Daniel. And so that's always kind of interesting, too. Go ahead.
Well, yes. If you've got Jewish names that are glorifying God.
Right.
And he changes them to glorify his gods.
Correct.
Jesus is going to use the proper name.
There you go. And that's exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened. Jesus uses Daniel. He doesn't use... Yep. Look at there. I got a little chart up there for you to take a look at. These are the four friends, the four individuals. You'll see their Babylonian names right there. You'll see the meaning of their Hebrew name And then you also see the meaning of their Chaldean name or Babylonian name on there. This is a cool little chart. I like this little chart because it shows you exactly what they changed their meaning of their name to. And notice, if you look at those, just like John was bringing up, those were names focused on Nebuchadnezzar's gods, not God the Father. Questions or comments about that? I've still got that cough. I can't get quite rid of it, but working on it. All right. Okay, moving on to the next one. Even though all four men were given Babylonian names, the book usually refers to Daniel as Daniel, by his Hebrew name. Okay? Now again, Daniel was considered to be the writer, but there's also some question about there was probably another writer as well, because it changes from first person to third person as the writings go on. So when that change occurs, that probably means somebody else was writing at the time. But when it comes to Daniel, Daniel is talked about by only his Hebrew name. The other three, however, are more frequently called by their Babylonian names. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Yeah, no, I'm fine, thank you. It's good water, yeah. No, I'm fine, thank you. All right. This is the way the four friends are usually remembered today. And in the Bible stories that we read about and we study about dealing with Daniel, we use those four names. We use Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and we use Daniel. Questions, comments, anybody? All right, next week, we'll start right there, verse 8 of Daniel chapter 1, and we'll keep right on going, and we'll go through and we'll learn more and more and more. And like I said, the first big thing that we see is when Daniel is called in to interpret that dream. And that gets him favor with Nebuchadnezzar. Okay, anything else? All right, good deal. Is there anyone here who needs to partake of the Lord's Supper that did not have the opportunity to partake of it this morning? Yes, we have one. If you'll go right back there with Brother Rendell. We have two, actually. If you go right back there with Brother Rendell, he'll take care of that. All right. Anything else? Okay. Well, I appreciate y'all being here tonight. And I appreciate this study. This is a good study, I think. And I think you'll learn quite a bit from it. All right. Let's stand and let's sing our closing song and have our closing prayer.